Okay, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In this segment, we'll talk about brewing science, the fourth element of beer, which we haven't touched on yet, which is yeast. A lot of brewers will tell you that they just make wort. Yeast actually makes beer. Others will tell you that their job is wrangling yeast like it was a pet or livestock. That's because yeast is a living thing. It is the living ingredient in beer. Yeast consumes sugar and produces both alcohol and carbon dioxide as its waste product. The vast majority of the flavors that you'll encounter in when you taste a beer were produced by the yeast. They don't come from the grain and they don't come from the hops. They come from the yeast. So the type of yeast that is used is incredibly influential in the style of beer and the end product that's produced. If you look at the two big subcategories of beer, ales and lagers, that dividing line is determined by the type of yeast that are used. Ales are the older style of beer, and they use a yeast known as Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is a warm fermenting yeast, and it tends to float on the top of the fermentation vessel. So this style of yeast, as I said, is the oldest style. It has been in use for thousands of years. Because it ferments at a warmer temperature, it tends to produce more fruity flavors that are associated with ales. So it doesn't ferment as clean as certain lager yeasts. What are lager yeasts? Well, they are the other big style of yeast that exists out there, and they are referred to as cold fermenting yeast or bottom fermenting yeast because they like to operate at much cooler temperatures, whereas ale yeasts are typically happiest fermenting between 68 and 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Lager yeasts like to ferment down around 35 degrees Fahrenheit. They work much slower than ale yeasts, and they tend to produce less flavors, what are known as esters, so they are said to ferment much cleaner. Lager yeast really only came into vogue in the last few hundred years. There's still some scientific debate about exactly how they came to be. We know that they're a hybrid between ale yeasts and another type of yeast, but exactly when and how this hybridization took place is still under study. These lager yeasts, though, became extremely popular in Germany, where cold caves were used to store the beer. That was where these yeasts were essentially discovered, if you will, in Germany in the production of lagers. Lager is simply the German word for store, or in other words, to lager something is to store it. These lager yeasts, because they worked slowly at cold temperatures, had to be stored in caves to give them time to work and produce the beer. With the discovery in the 19th century, Louis Pasteur, of the fact that yeast was what produced beer, prior to his work, there was debates on exactly what made beer beer. Lager yeasts were identified and pure cultures were developed. And at that point, lager yeasts began to take over the world in the sense that their styles of beers being produced using these yeasts were incredibly popular. Today, every typical beer that you think of, Budweiser, Miller, Coors, Heineken, these are all lagers. Now, when the American craft brewing movement got started back in the 80s, most breweries began producing ales. This was for two reasons. One, they were acting in revolt to the status quo, which was predominantly lagers. The second reason was because ales mature much quicker. As I said, the word lager means you're going to store beer and give it the time for these slower acting yeasts to get the job done. From a business perspective, time is money. So it would be easier for a craft brewery, small operation which needs rapid turnover of its product, to use ale yeasts and produce a beer in 1 to 2 weeks, as opposed to using lager yeast to produce a beer in 2 to 3 months. So that is one of the main reasons why the initial focus on American craft brewing for decades was primarily on ales. Now, there were exceptions to that. Sam Adams Lager, which came out in the late 80s, early 90s, was a lager beer and became extremely popular. But the vast majority of craft beers that you typically think of from that period, whether it's Sierra Nevada Pale Ale or Pete's Wicked Ale or what have you, they were ales, as their name states. Today, though, craft brewers are moving more and more into producing lager beers. If you look locally on the Kenai, St. Elias Brewing Company, one of their flagship beers that they pretty much keep on at all times is a Czech Pilsner. Pilsners are a subset of lager beers. Several other breweries around the state also produce lager beers on a regular basis. So craft brewing is beginning to move more strongly into producing lager beers. There are other yeasts out there, of course, besides the two major ones that I've just discussed, your ale yeast and your lager yeast. One of the other yeasts that you'll often hear about in brewing is Brettanomyces. Brettanomyces is very different from the two standard brewing yeasts. It works much slower, and it is also capable of consuming sugars which the other yeasts cannot, and it's well known for producing, shall we say, funky flavors. Some people refer to it as barnyard flavors. Some people perceive it as being tart or sour flavors. 100 or 150 years ago, most beers would have had some Brettanomyces in them because beers were being produced and stored in wooden vessels, and wooden vessels were where Brettanomyces lived. In fact, when it was first identified, it was cultured from a beer that had been aged in a wooden barrel. So it was very prevalent in beers, as I said, up until the end of the 19th century. However, as beers began to be produced in stainless steel, Brettanomyces was seen as a defect and was basically eliminated from most beers. It's making a comeback today. As more beers are being stored in wood and aged, some people find the flavors produced by Brettanomyces very interesting. It takes time, because I mentioned Brettanomyces is a slow worker, but if given time, Brettanomyces will basically consume all the remaining sugars in a beer and produce these quote-unquote interesting flavors. So a beer that's been aged in a bottle for a couple of years with Brettanomyces is typically comes out as extremely dry and with some of these kind of funky flavors that are produced. So those are the three big yeasts that are used in brewing today, but they aren't the only microorganisms. If you move into sour beers, you begin talking about things like Lactobacillus and Pediococcus. These are not yeasts, but bacteria. However, they function in some ways very similar to a yeast, but they tend to produce acids. Lactobacillus makes lactic acid, Pediococcus makes other acids, and in our tastes, we perceive acid as sour. So these are other bacteria, microbes that can be added to beers to produce sour beers, which have become quite popular in some quarters lately. The traditional way to use these bacteria is over a long period of time in barrel aging. Along with Brettanomyces, they can reside in the pores of wooden barrels. And given time, they will gradually sour a beer, which can be then be blended with younger versions of it to achieve the flavor profile that you're looking for. If you don't have that much time, you don't have those barrels available, some brewers will practice what is called kettle souring, where prior to brewing a beer, or in the process of brewing a beer, before a beer is boiled, they will let it sit overnight in the kettle and allow lactobacillus to work on it to produce lactic acid prior to the beer being boiled and then fermented with regular yeast. That lactic acid that's produced in the kettle will give the finished beer a sour taste. So that's what's known as kettle souring. But however you use it, whatever you call it, yeast is the living ingredient in beer. Yeast is what makes beer. If it wasn't for yeast, we wouldn't have beer. The Germans used to call yeast God is good. They didn't know what it was. They didn't understand how it worked. But they knew that if they didn't get some of this yeast into their beer, the beer wouldn't come out right. So think about that as you go out and you taste beers and you drink it. Be cognizant that what you're drinking is something that was produced by a living organism, be it a brewer's yeast or Brettanomyces or a microbial cocktail. We're drinking the product of the life cycle of an organism. I hope you found that interesting here on Brewing Science, and we'll be right back with our next segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In this month's beer style segment, we're going to be talking about coffee beers. It's a well-known fact that we Alaskans love our coffee. Blame it on the long, dark days, the cold winters, but it seems like there's a coffee shop or espresso stand on just about every other corner. So it stands to reason that blending the flavors of coffee into beer would be right up our alley. First, though, a reminder of what coffee beers are not. Coffee beers are not beers to which caffeine has been added. The addition of pure caffeine to alcoholic beverages was outlawed by the Food and Drug Administration in 2010 after underage students were hospitalized after drinking the caffeine and alcohol-infused beverage Four Loko. While the addition of pure caffeine was outlawed, it is still legal to use other substances which contain caffeine, such as coffee or chocolate, as ingredients. Coffee and a beer are a lot like beverage bookends. One is typically consumed in the morning and one at night, and on certain days or occasions, the two can be flipped. For longtime drinkers of stouts and porters, the taste of coffee is apparent in the brew, even if no coffee beans were used. Thanks to roasted grains, the longer the kiln, the more likely a beer will take on notes of coffee. Coffee and beer are not dissimilar. Both require roasting, be it beans or grain. They offer effects after drinking due to caffeine or alcohol. Both are widely consumed, have passionate followings, even have their own geek communities. At first blush, while it might not seem the two have a lot in common flavor-wise, they share many taste similarities. There's no more natural pairing in the world than beer and the coffee bean. The deep roasted flavors of dark beers like stouts, Schwarz beers, which are black German lagers, porters, Doppelbocks, and others lend themselves perfectly to the beautiful black bitterness of coffee. To incorporate coffee flavor into their beers, brewers will typically steep the grounds in cold liquor, which is another name for brewing water, for between 24 and 48 hours, letting the water take on the rich coffee aroma and flavor, and it is then blended with the beer. This cold toddy method is the reason why when you smell a beer made with coffee, it's almost like opening a fresh bag of beans just before the grind. Some brewers will use ground coffee in bags, others the beans themselves. Some will have a roaster prepare for them, others will do it in-house, but what most agree upon is that the cold toddy method works best. This may be in part thanks to the fact that a cold brewed method of coffee releases less acid from the beans than the hot method. Less acid means a minimal impact on the overall flavor of the beer itself. Hot brewed coffee added to a beer quickly becomes too astringent to drink, brewers say. While coffee is most often added to dark beers, there are exceptions. Stone Brewing Company released Dayman Coffee IPA, a collaboration beer with Aleman Brewing of Chicago and Two Brothers Brewing Company of Warrenville, Illinois, in mid-2013. Calling it an intriguing beer, Stone Brewer Jerry Moyner says the IPA offers a totally different canvas from a stout, and by using citra hops, lemony notes in the coffee, quote, melded together and really brought out the best of both. The coffee was bright and punchy, end quote. Still, if you want to give coffee beers a try, the local examples you'll have to choose from are pretty much uniformly dark. St. Elias Brewing offers its Fair Trade Coffee Porter on a regular basis, and Kenai River Brewing Company currently has Declination Stout, brewed with beans from the Declination Roasting Company, available on both carbon dioxide and nitro. Midnight Sun has produced its Arctic Rhino Porter for years, while Alaskan Brewing won a gold medal at last year's Great American Beer Festival with its Heritage Coffee Brown Ale. There's also Girdwood Brewing's Hippie Speedball Coffee Stout, an oatmeal stout with plenty of roasty flavors from both the grains and cold steep coffee. If you like coffee and beer, be sure to give one of these local brews a try. After the next break, we'll be moving on to this month's beer gear. This is Bill Howell, drinking on the Last Frontier on FM 91.9 Kenai Soldotna. And welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. In our final segment this month, Beer Gear is back. This month on Beer Gear, I want to recommend a documentary called Beer Wars. Beer Wars is a 2009 film about the American beer industry. It covers the differences between large corporate breweries, namely Anheuser-Busch, the Miller Brewing Company, and Coors Brewing Company, opposed to smaller breweries like Dogfish Head Brewing, Yuengling, Stone Brewing Company, and other producers of craft beer. Also covered is how advertising and lobbyists are used to control the beer market, implying that these things harm competition and consumer choice. Throughout the film, there's a theme that the smallest breweries have next to no chance to compete due to the sheer volume of advertising and the outdated beer distribution laws. The original laws demanded a three-tier system to separate the powers of selling beer. The law demands that the beer brewer cannot deliver directly to the retailer, supposedly creating a separation of powers resembling the U.S. government's legislative, judicial, and executive branches. The film claims these laws are now inhibiting growth of smaller brewers and therefore allowing the largest brewers to maintain an oligopoly on beer. The film was written, produced, narrated, and directed by Annette Barron, former head of Mike's Hard Lemonade. When I teach my beer appreciation class at Kenai Peninsula College, we always spend a couple of classes watching this film, as I think it's a great overview of the challenges faced by craft brewers. You can find copies of Beer Wars at some of our local libraries as well as online, so I strongly recommend you check it out if you want to understand the challenges facing the craft beer industry in the U.S. Beers of Alaska, beer on the last. Well, that's about it for this month on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I want to leave you with a closing quote from Sarah Palin's alter ego, Tina Fey. In a study, scientists report that drinking beer can be good for the liver. I'm sorry, did I say scientists? I meant Irish people. Have a great month, and we'll see you back here on Drinking on the Last Frontier in April. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and this is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Cheers. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst. Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Beers